Shalom Aleichem.
Aleichem Shalom.
This is Rabbi Shlomo Ben Levi. I have the privilege and honor today to be interviewing an elder in our community, a man by the name of Gabbai David Lee. He's 88 years old. He is a member and officer of Commandment Keepers Congregation. And today's date is the 23rd of August, 2008. And we're here at Beth Elohim Hebrew Congregation and St. Albans, Queens. Gabbai Lee, thank you for agreeing to do this interview with us.
All right.
It's a pleasure having you with us. Why don't you start by telling us a little bit about your life, starting with your parents and ancestry, walking us through your childhood, early adult life, and we'll start with that background.
Hi, my name, I was born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, in the year 1919, November 27th. I came to New York at an early age with my family, Stephen J. Lee and my mother, Fanny Lee. I was 5 years old. And we moved to a place on Belmont Avenue in Brownsville area of Brooklyn, where I started to go to school. And that's where I got my education, at the elementary school, junior high school, and high school. I graduated from Thomas Jefferson High School on Pennsylvania Avenue in Brooklyn. I grew up in Brownsville, and then my father passed away at an early age, 62. And I was drafted in the Army, where I spent 3 years in the Army. 2.5 years I was in Europe, and I got discharged in 1946, the same year that I got married.
So this was World War II?
World War II.
And what division did you serve in?
I served in the 4005 truck outfit, and I attained the title of Staff Sergeant, and I was discharged in 1946 at Port in New Jersey. I can't remember.
That's like some of the details. But I think it is interesting that there were black Jews serving in World War II.
Yes,
there were. What were some of your memories about being a black soldier during the Second World War?
Well, the most outstanding memory I had is that during the holy season, I did get permission to attend Passover service, Rosh Hashanah service, Day of Atonement service, but I was the only black Jew in my outfit.
What countries did
I served
visit
in
Europe?
I landed in Scotland, and we went over to Germany. I was in Germany. I went to France. I was in Luxembourg. All those countries are in Europe. Mm-hmm. And then the war ended with Japan, surrendered Japan. And then we came back to the United States, where I was discharged. And from then on, I grew up to be a man, but that year, 46, I met my wife and we got married, 1946.
So now you were already an Israelite then. How did you come into the kind of knowledge of you being a black Jew?
I don't know. I can only tell you that I've always been this way all my life. My father taught me Hebrew, and I did go to Hebrew school in Brownsville. Hmm. And naturally, you know, I always just assumed that this was my way of life.
Well, you have to tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that was very easy to talk about, because the Hebrew school that I attended was on Stone Avenue. It was known as Rabbi Chaim Berlin. And I went there, and I got that's where I got my education in Hebrew, starting with the first book, Reshis Das, the Speaking of that, I still have my first racial dust at home, and I use it every morning for Moday Ani service, my prayer. And that's more or less my early life. But I was always know that I was a Hebrew. I was an Israelite.
And you were taught this by your parents?
Started with my father, mm-hmm. who raised me and my two sisters in this way of life.
And you said he was from Philadelphia, or do you know where?
Oh, they came from Virginia. My father and mother came from Virginia. Mm-hmm. But I've never known any other way of life.
So they migrated from Virginia to Philadelphia, and then Philadelphia to New York.
Right. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't born in Virginia. I was born in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
And according to your family's oral history, they had always been black Jews?
As far as I know, I never knew anything about Christianity mm-hmm. until I grew to, well, in the early age, later on in life, between ages of, 10 on to my bar mitzvah. Yeah, I was bar mitzvah mm-hmm. when I was 13 years old.
Well, tell us about your bar mitzvah.
Well, there isn't very much to tell. I had the bar mitzvah service. And the first thing you have to know this. The first thing that occurred when I went to the Hebrew school, they asked me about circumcision. And I had to shove. That was the way it was. And I said, yes, okay, I'm circumcised. But they used the word mohel, moral. Mm-hmm. I knew that immediately what they were talking about. And I said, okay, you want to see? And I showed that I was circumcised. As I grew older, I learned more about what I heard from my father about Rabbi Matthew, but I had never met him.
So you attended this Hebrew school. Was it a day school, or would you go after attending public school?
After attending public school.
And then you would go?
And then go to Hebrew school.
How did they react to you as a black person in that school?
I was a curiosity at first, but that wore off. They began to be, I was accepted there. I had none of that racism. I was never exposed to what you might call racism or all that stuff, because after they found out that I was moral, everything went along smooth. And then my father passed away.
And you had your bar mitzvah where?
At the area of Rabbi Chaim Berlin. They also had a synagogue there. That's where my bar mitzvah took place. And at that time, I'm 13 years old now. And then life goes on. I've been going to high school, junior high school, going to high school, and getting my education. Mm-hmm. But I always knew that I was not a Christian. So I never joined any church or anything like that. I was always in the Hebrew way of life. Mm-hmm. Always. Then, after that, came the Army. I did the 3 years. I was honorably discharged as a staff sergeant from the 4,005th Truck Unit. That's the unit I was in. And it was great. I would say that the Army was a great experience. I believe that the Army showed, because you were on your own, you know. Mm-hmm. I think the Army made a man out of me. Because I couldn't have anybody depend on me. Everybody else, but you know, hello, how are you this? But I got along very well in the Army. And then after being discharged from the Army, I got married.
Tell us about your wife.
Yeah, she was 22 years old, and I was 26. That's the year, in 1946. And we've been married ever since. Her name is Violet. Her maiden name was Violet Noel, but after we got married, it became Violet Lee.
Where was she from in her family?
She was born right here in Brooklyn, and her family, her family, her father came from Trinidad, but her mother was an American. They got married and had two girls, my wife Violet and my sister-in-law Mildred. And now we've been married 62 years, long time. I have now a son and a daughter.
Their names?
Stephen and Nora. Stephen is now divorced, but he got two fine daughters. Their names are Nicole and Jennifer, young ladies. And they live here in New York. They live in Long Island.
And your daughter?
Oh, my daughter, she's married, and they have no children. And my son, I said, he's divorced. And now he's a bachelor. But that's how it is. Now, in 1951, my father was dead. My mother said to me, I think that you should start going over to a temple in New York, in Harlem. I said, what she said, there was a rabbi there by the name of Rabbi Matthew. I said, okay, and she pressed me so hard, I had to go. I had to go there on the Sabbath. The first Sabbath I went over to Commandment Keepers, I came late. Now, the shamus was named Robert Steele, and I evidently came during Torah service, so I couldn't get into the temple. He didn't allow anybody to come in because that would interrupt the Torah service. So I stood in the hallway with the other people who came behind me. And after the Torah service was over, he said, okay, you can go in. So I sat in the back, and that's the first time I had ever seen Rabbi Matthew.
Where was the congregation located?
On 128th Street and Lenox Avenue.
And this is Commandment Keepers.
Commandment Keepers.
Describe it, how it looked.
Well, it was, well, the building was not, it was built an ordinary building. Hmm. The temple was sort of very nice. It was on the first floor. And I would say that they did have a membership. Every seat was taken when I first walked in there. Hmm. First time I got a table, every seat was taken, so I had to sit in the back because I got there late. And when the service was over, I spoke to Brother Steele, but I didn't know him. I said, excuse me, Shamus, what time does service start? He said, service starts here at 9:30. I said, well, I have to come from Brooklyn here. He said, that's the starting sign. That's Rabbi Matthew's order, starting sign to come to the center. I said, okay. So I went back home, and my mother asked me how I like. I said, the service was very nice. She says, and? I said, I saw three rabbis. She says, oh, yeah? And I named them Rabbi Matthews, Rabbi Small, and Rabbi Stevens. Those are the first three rabbis I had ever seen. You know, and I saw them on called the Bema now. Mm-hmm. They were on the Bema there. Well, the next week, I did go and I got there on time. And I enjoyed the service and to hear the Rabbi Matthew speak. He reminded me so much of my father and what I had already been told about Shabbat, Holy Days, Rosh Hashanah, Pesach, Day of Atonement, and everything we had to know about Hebrew. And that's how I began to go to Commandment Keepers fully. And that, but I didn't join Commandment Keepers after I'd been going around about 2 years. And I finally joined Rabbi Matthew in 1955.
Describe, if you will, what Rabbi Matthews was like then in the
very stately
impression.
Very stately. He wasn't a big, tall man, but I would say that he was about maybe 5'7". But he carried himself in such a stately manner. You know, he's very stately, very, and quite eloquent. Quite eloquent, you know, as a speaker and a person. And when I approached him about membership, he told me that membership requires, and he laid it all out to me in detail, exactly what membership required.
What were the basic requirements?
Well, the basic requirement was circumcision. That he taught, circumcision and being a Sabbath day keeper and obeying the Ten Commandments. And just all around Hebrew knowledge, you'd have to know that he taught. And he asked me a lot of questions, you know, my background and his main question was, how did I find out about him? And I told him, I said, I heard it through my father and my mother. And he asked me, said, and where are you from? I told him, I'm from Brooklyn. He said, oh, that's New York too. I said, yes. And that's how the whole thing began. From then on, and after attending regularly, I found that Rabbi Matthew was very strict. Very strict.
Can you give us some examples, maybe?
Well, his strictness was, you know, punctuality. Be punctual. You know, and in general, be a good citizen. He didn't emphasize that so much as he asked sort of about punctuality and attending service. And he told me point blank, it's not easy if you intend to be an Israelite, be an Israelite. That was his foundation. And from that, I began to get a better handle by being an older person. Got a better handle of what this is really. And some of the things he told me, I had a chance to go home and read it in my own scripture. And it was so close to what my father had talked to me about. I said, I had decided this is it.
Well, what were some of his teachings or some of the things that he taught, and what really struck you, impressed you about?
Well, what really impressed me more than anything else was the obeying the laws of the Almighty God. Obeying, and particularly about maintaining kosher diet. You don't eat everything and everywhere. His was definitely about being kosher at all times. And he spoke about circumcision. I told you a moment ago, I had to show. I had to show. Just can't say you'd be circumcised. You have to let him really, I'm talking about Rabbi Matthew, and let him know and show. And we did that very quietly. But he really impressed me by, as I said a moment ago, by what he was teaching, which I had heard and from my father, and I listened closely. And that really stuck me.
What were some of those things in general, in terms of things that your father taught you and things that you heard from Rabbi Matthew?
Well, about circumcision. That's one of the things he spoke about. And also, Sabbath day, keeping the Sabbath day. And eating kosher. You know. Particularly, you know, like he said, that when I say kosher, he said, I don't mean you go to McDonald's or in those fast food places, eating Chinese food here and stuff like that. He said, I'm talking about kosher, that you eat kosher. Kosher fish, kosher meat. He taught me, he said all those things. I had heard it before, but I really got more impressed, as I said, as I kept going more regularly. I got more impressed with how he, and his mannerism. How he taught it, and His teaching to me was very clear, like A, B, C. Really, I didn't have to struggle with any of his teachings, really, because I had heard it before. So therefore, I knew this was, as I said a moment ago, I knew this was the way I want to go. Mm-hmm. Going back a little bit, in the Army, when I was in the Army, I have to tell you this, when I was telling them about that, they used to sing a lot of Christian songs. Mm-hmm. And I never sang, because I didn't know them. Mm-hmm. I didn't know those songs. Mm-hmm. But they tried to suggest it, no, okay, we don't like that. So therefore, I never really got involved in Christianity at all. Mm-hmm.
What did Reverend Matthews teach in terms of history?
About going back?
Yeah. How did that compare to your father?
The 12 tribes of Israel. Mm-hmm. What tribe you're from. Also, I'm from the tribe of Yehuda. Mm-hmm. And I asked him, he showed me, he said, you have a mark. And the mark, he said, is on my body. I never knew that. Mm-hmm. So he showed it to me, Rabbi Matthew. Mm-hmm. And he said, now the mark will be with you. This show you what mark, what you, tribe you come from. Mm-hmm. I'm from the tribe of Yehuda. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, no, I'm thinking to myself. I said, you're right, I don't know. I never paid any attention to that mark. I never thought, see any of that. But Rabbi Matthew was very astute, and if you listen to him he's very astute, very dynamic. Mm-hmm. That's the only prayer I can give you. But I said before, he was very stately and very strict. Mm-hmm. And those are the things that stayed with me. And when I think of him, I always think of my father. My father, I always say, gave me the basic. Because Rabbi Matthew, the necessary, I guess you say, the necessary fundamentals of what Hebrewism was all about. Mm-hmm. And then I met Rabbi, his right-hand man, Rabbi Donnelly Small. Mm-hmm. I also met Rabbi Matthew Stephen, who was on the Bema with Rabbi Matthew. Mm-hmm. And they all were okay, but Rabbi Matthew really, really instilled in me the knowledge of who I was.
Can you describe some of the services?
Oh, not that in detail. Now, he had a choir. Mm-hmm. And a piano player, and they would sing Hebrew song. Mm-hmm. And then he would lecture on it. Mm-hmm. And that, you're smart, you write down, you know. And that's what I did a lot of the time. I wrote down different passages of the scripture and stuff. And he also said one thing that really said a lot to me. He said, the Bible that you say, it says St. James Version. He says, if you don't have to believe all they got in that Bible. They got that Bible made up. Not for your benefit, but for their benefit. I think that's right, but I don't have a St. James Version. Mm-hmm. I got the Bible that I guess you call it the Hebrew Bible. Mm-hmm. That's what I have. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Matthew, in my opinion, I've always given him credit that he made me think of who I am. And he also backed it up with his sermon, you know, who you are. He's not a Negro. He's not none of that. Mm-hmm. You are Israelite. Mm-hmm. You are Hebrew. And I was greatly taken by that. Because, you know, that time we were all supposed to be called the footstool of the world, but it isn't true. And from Rabbi Matthew, I learned who I really was. Mm-hmm. And that knowledge has always stuck with me, even today, at being 88 years old. But I have to say that my father, I believe, was really set the foundation within me, let me know who I was. See, I never got into Christianity at all, at no time. Mm-hmm. Never went to church, never had any preacher, never, just never involved at all with Christianity whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Even up to the moment that I'm talking to you here. I never bought a Christian because, as my father had a phrase, Christianity is not for the black man. Mm-hmm. And it's true. Mm-hmm. Christianity was never for us. Mm-hmm. But I got to say too that Rabbi Matthew in his time, I would say, one is the greatest teacher. He and my father are the two greatest teachers that inspired me of my life. I've gotten good teachers from some of the newer rabbis, like your father, Rabbi Shlomo ben Levi. I've got good teachers from Rabbi White, great teacher. And then there was, let's see, Rabbi Yeshua, good teaching. Rabbi Yehonatan, good teaching. It's been my good fortune not to have found anybody or find among the rabbis of today. I haven't found one rabbi that has went off, I would say, the path of being an Israelite. I find all of them, and I go around. I go to all the temples, well, you know that. And even at Shema, they don't have a rabbi, but they got chiefs. And those chiefs, I believe, too, have quite a bit of knowledge. I do believe some have heard you speak, some have heard the other rabbis speak, because they no matter which temple I attend, they all seem to be in one path or one accord. Mm-hmm. And I listen closely because, you know, some of these, I want to be a rabbi, but they're not ordained. I don't even bother with them.
Mm-hmm. Again, go back to Rabbi Matthews and Commandment Keepers in the 1950s. What did Rabbi Matthews teach about Judaism and its relationship to people of African descent?
His main speech was to let us know that even though the African nation is not recognized as it should be by the white countries, he always let us know that Africa was really, I always said, I'm talking about me personally, I always said, he's showing us the continent of Africa was really the continent that God, Moses and all those people, all those elders in that time, all came from Africa. And he always had me, I thought he meant, and I still think he meant, that the continent of Africa is really the, I guess, the foundation of education. Mm-hmm. At least I took it that way. Mm-hmm. Because he always kept Africa in both his lectures that I heard. Always the continent of Africa always seems to be a part of the lecture. Mm-hmm. He never said, I never heard him downgrade any other place, but he always spoke of Africa as where we come from.
And what was his relationship with white Jews?
He had a decent relationship with them. There was a white Jew by the name of Morris Morgenstern, who used to come to 28th Street frequently. Mm-hmm. And sometimes he'd bring some other men with him. I didn't pay much attention to them, you know. But I did see them. Mm-hmm. They did come to Commandment Keepers. He'd be there on the Shabbat, and he'd let them come to the Torah of Megillah. But some of them couldn't make a Megillah. Believe it or not, some of them white Jews could not make a Megillah. particularly young guys, they couldn't make a living. Mm-hmm. But he always had a, he got the Torah, mm-hmm. always had a minion. Mm-hmm. Every time I was there was a minion. Mm-hmm. And he just like, I guess the rabbis of the day, everybody had to read their portion. Mm-hmm. Then they get to blessing after.
Do you remember Rabbi Block?
I saw Rabbi Block at the temple once. Mm. I think he was from Brotherhood.
Right.
Yeah, I saw him once. Mm. In fact, I was to his temple one time myself. Mm. Now, I'm not sure whether it's 21st Street or 23rd Street, mm. but I did see him.
Mm. Right. About how big was the congregation?
Oh, I don't know. Numerically, you're talking mm-hmm. about?
Yeah.
Mm. Rough guess. I say, it wasn't, he didn't have what he called a large place, but mm. it was always filled. Mm. Maybe 250, 300 people, you know. Mm-hmm. Might even been more. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you had to get there early if you want to get it early. Get early. You mm-hmm. want a decent seat. Mm-hmm. You had to get there early. Mm-hmm. After I decided going regular, I used to make it my business to get there early. Mm-hmm. But I never saw, and on the holidays, you really had standing room. Mm-hmm. Pesach, mm-hmm. Rosh Hashanah, Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even with Sukkah. Mm. But you see, it wasn't a big place, Rabbi. Mm-hmm. That's about that. That's about
right. Describe how he kept some of the high holy days. So maybe starting with Passover. How would it, say a Passover Seder? Any things that he did you that were unique?
Well, he had Passover, you go up with matzah. Then they had Av Komin. Then they had the, I never took part in that, where you get the blessing and you found that hidden matzah. Mm-hmm. He had that.
Now, that kind of, is that, you're talking about the beloved son of the year?
Yeah.
Well, what was that tradition? Because that's something, I think, unique
yeah.
to man.
Well, that was this. In the event, they had three matzahs. Mm-hmm. And if you got the matzah that had the broken piece, you'd be the beloved son of the year. Mm-hmm. And that meant that you would receive the direct blessing from Rabbi Matthew. Mm-hmm. You'd have that, like the beloved son would sit there, and he'd be right there, his arms around the beloved son of the year. Mm-hmm. And you had to be 13 years old or people. Mm-hmm. Or some of the beloved son of the year, like, it looked to me like they in the late, well, I say early 18, 19, 21, you know, mm-hmm. something like that. Mm-hmm. But that was one of his procedures. Mm-hmm.
And what about, say, Rosh Hashanah, how would he celebrate the Rosh Hashanah?
Well, Rosh Hashanah is, you know, I guess more or less the same way that is being done today. He didn't do what too many, I never saw anything I would say that would make it different, mm-hmm. you know. Young people, he let you know you had to pass.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, say, for instance, with Rosh Hashanah, one of the traditions that's credited to Rabbi Matthews is, say, for instance, the apple, creating the apple.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, I don't remember that very well.
In terms of preparing an apple, putting a petition in the apple, and going to the river.
Going to the river. Mm-hmm. Yes, true. Okay, if you want to, you know, like you said, you have to take out the top of the apple. Mm-hmm. You put your petition in there, but he tell you, don't write in ink, write in pencil, because once you throw it in the water will dissolve the ink. Mm-hmm. So you couldn't use ink or crayon. You had to use a real good pencil to write. I get to call it lead pencil. I wrote mine always in pencil. And I went to the, when we go to the river, we would stand up front. And naturally, we would have to stand back. And if you're going to throw an apple, you have to put it in a brown bag and wrap it. So, you know, so don't, just, if you throw just apple in there, it might just fall apart. But your petition is in the apple. You see now. And you wrote on that petition, you could ask the Almighty, well, bless, you know, whatever you want. I either ask for blessing to bless my family and ask for knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. That was my usual thing. And then you throw it in the river.
What river did y'all go to?
East River. East River.
And so y'all would walk from the synagogue to the East River?
Walk.
Conduct now, service there?
Yeah, he did a service at the East River. It wasn't too long, maybe. I guess maybe no more than 45 minutes. But we had to walk to the river. But if you elderly person, you would try to see if you could rent some transportation for you to get there. But everybody likes to walk. Like to walk. Everybody's got on their medallion, you know, the rabbis, and all of us wear our tali, you know. And the women all wore white. Wore white. And there were many elderly people, you know, that obviously, you know, at that time, that wouldn't do walk. Some of them, they walked to the river. We walked down 28th or something, I can't remember. I'm not sure if we're ready for it.
And again, how about at Yom Kippur?
Fast.
Yes, you had
that
fast.
Fasting was for 13 and up. Now, he let you know, fast start at sundown, let's say Monday. Tuesday is fast day. You pass from sundown Monday to sundown Tuesday. He said, no such thing as time. 5:30, and said, this is like that. Sundown. It's supposed to be finishing the sundown Tuesday. And that, he said, fast. He said, fast. I mean, no water, no chewing gum, no candy, none of that. Fast. You don't have anything to eat or drink for 24 hours.
And would he use candles and cups of oil?
Yes, that's what he did, but I never. I used it on the menorah.
Right. But in terms of, again, customs that have been credited to him, having a tashlik cup on Rosh Hashanah and a Kippur cup on Yom Kippur, that would be filled with anointing oil. People would put coins
in there. But remember now, the coins you put in there, silver, no copper. The nickel was out because nickel didn't have no paper money. Had to be silver. Silver half a dollar, silver quarter, silver dimes. That had to be in that Kippur cup.
And this is something again that he originated. And for Sukkot, do you recall a custom that he had of having people bring fruit on Sukkot?
Yeah, yes. But it has to be, as he used the word, first grade. It just can't be a banana that's half and half, you know. But as far as I can remember, the most fruit I saw there was usually apples, pears, peaches. Some bananas, but not those are dominant. Apples, pears, and peaches.
People would bring those on Sukkot.
Yes.
And would they do anything special, unique on Shavuot.
If they did, I didn't. Yeah. I mean, when you say special, you mean like...
Like baking cakes.
Oh, that was for... Thing comes to me now. Yes, you bring in a cake, and this cake, you'll be tested, you know.
What was the test?
The test was he had a vial, I guess this long. It must have been oral in that vial. Mm-hmm. And after you bring the cake, and after you have your name on it, I brought one cake, because I couldn't, I still can't cook. But that time I was learning how to bake this cake. I just said, I'm going to bake a cake. So I showed, what the big cake, small cake. And I told my mother, you got to help me make, I got to make a cake. She said, what are you going to do? I said, the rabbi is going to test these cakes. I said, I want mine to test good. But I had never, this is the first one I ever took. I seen the cakes before, but I never took a cake till this time. So it got, you know, you're nervous, you know, at least I was. So it got to say, yeah, I see a cake here from a David Lee. And he pushed that in there, took it out. Good. Because it was well done. But there's some cakes he put that tester in, brought it out. He said, he didn't let it finish baking. Because it'd be some dough on that vial that he stuck in there. But that's the way he says that was like a testing. A test, I guess, of your skill. I don't know whether baking cake or whether the test of whether you are righteous or not. I didn't, you know, but that's where you test those cakes on.
Right. Now, talk about the composition of the congregation. The reason I ask you this question, some people have said, you know, that there was tension, a conflict between people of Caribbean descent and American descent, North and South. Describe the kind of mix of people and how people got along in the congregation.
Well,
and some of the people you knew and remembered, both as friends and teachers. And
as far as I can say, I've never heard him make any speech on difference of where you come from, you're African, or you're an American black, and she's a West Indian. I never heard that in one of his speeches. Mm. Never heard that. And as far as the congregation is concerned, I never seen any, I guess you call it hostility, between the members. Mm. Maybe they might have had some little, I don't like you, just I don't know about that. Mm. But as far as I had to say that he made a distinction between American and the Western. No, I never saw that. And I never saw anything among the membership that would bring that about. I never heard her speak on that. And I never heard anybody in the membership, well, I don't like her because she's just, oh, I don't bother with them. Might have been, but I didn't see it.
So you don't think, from your observation and your experience, that there weren't these like factions or groups of people associating
time.
With each other?
Not in my time.
Tension between
different
groups?
Not in my time. There might have been criticisms, you know, among themselves. Mm-hmm. But I never was approached or anybody. I spoke to all of them. I spoke to whoever comes by, shook hands, just that. I never heard or seen anything that I would call discontent. Mm-hmm. Might have been.
Mm-hmm. Along those lines. Who were some of the people who were there when you first arrived and through, say, the end of the 1960s? Some of the families,
well,
living or dead, and some of the teachers. And
let me see. Sister Crispin was the piano player. Mm-hmm. And then Rabbi Matthew's daughter, Florence, to go to the piano. When I first got to command the key, there was Sister Hulda.
Who were some of the mothers, elders of the engagement?
Let's see. I'm back now. You asked me a question called, really? Take my memory back to Mother Holden,
Judith and Mother Acock and
Sister Acock,
Beckles,
Sister Vanderpool, Sister Burrell, piano player Sister Crispin.
Describe some of them for us in terms of.
You say describe.
Well, what you remember about them, who they were, what they did in the congregation.
Let's see. I don't really know what their duties were in the congregation. Because I know Sister Crispin played the piano. Sister Hull, I know, used to sing. I think Sister Burrell, she had an office. And she had an office. What was her office? Sister Louise Burrell, what was her office?
Well, in terms of what roles of influence or their relationship to Rabbi Matthews and how things took place in terms of activities, functions, fundraisers.
Now, as far as fundraising is concerned, did have a thing. I'm trying to think of what's a dance. I went to one dance. And I couldn't answer that question because my knowledge is very limited.
Well, how would you summarize their role? Were they influential? Were they basically quiet and not playing a direct role?
They might have played a direct role. Maybe, you know, let's say I left. I left, I'm going home to Brooklyn. After service was over, Rabbi, I didn't really hang around. I'd get ready to go. Because I didn't have no car. I got to get the subway. Yeah, but it's a different story, you know? And so I couldn't really give you an answer on that. I just knew that every Shabbat or every holiday, they were there. They were there.
Were they highly respected and highly trusted by Rabbi Matthews, the rabbis,
evidently,
and other members?
Evidently. Because they were always there.
Well, the reason I ask is, every time I hear people talk about them, they refer to them with great reverence and
they
respect.
Yeah, they were always there. Mm-hmm. You know, I go there, and I went to the synagogue mostly the holidays, you understand? And I said, I never heard no discontent, no whatever you might call it, destructive, anything. And these women, the name I call Sister Burrell, Sister Vanderpool and Sister Burrell were sisters. Mm-hmm. I mean, natural sisters. Mm-hmm. And Sister Hulda, piano player. I can't remember the other people in the choir. Mm-hmm. But the names I call were all highly regarded, you know. And then Rabbi White and his family came on.
Now these are people more of your age.
Well, in my bracket.
Right. Who are some of those families?
Other than the Whites, other Rabbi White, who else came from Jersey? Rabbi McCullough Jonah. Rabbi Jonah. He came from Rabbi White. Sister White and his family, which would be his two sons and his daughter. And he ordained Rabbi White.
Right. We're going to get to that in a moment. Were the Yehonatans, were they there?
Yes. Yes.
Rabbi Yehonatan. When you arrived or after you arrived?
Well, I think they were there before me. I think Rabbi Yehonatan and Reverend Yehonatan were there because they took Rabbi Matthews on a lot of his lecture tours. I didn't have a car, but they did take him on a lot of tours and lectures around the country, as far as I know.
And other families, other people I've spoken to, Brother Joe Thomas?
I should remember him. He sat in the first pew. And what the heck is this? See, some of them names, but I know the faces, but I just can't get their names together right now.
And when did my father arrived.
Oh, rather monotonous for you.
Monotonous, right, okay. Describe that, I'm particularly interested
well,
in.
Well, yeah, because...
Brother Manon, who he was.
Yeah, Brother Manon, he worked on a railroad. Mm-hmm. I think the railroad.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the first time that I remember meeting your father, at that time, his name was McKeith. Mm-hmm. I remember that. And he took quite an interest in this way of life, mm-hmm. believe you me, mm-hmm. because he was seeking knowledge all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, but I'm talking about your father now. Mm-hmm. I don't think he missed a Sabbath that I know of. Because every Sabbath I went there, he was there. Every Shabbat, he'd be there. And Brother Manat, now, he was always the singer. You know, he was, as far as I know him, Rabbi Matthew and your father got along very well. I tell you the truth, I never saw no discontent at the temple.
What were some of the other families who were there in the 50s? I mean, not visitors, but the core.
I remember you coming. Mm-hmm. Well, there was, I know you heard the name, but she's married now. She was a little girl.
You don't mean Carla? Or,
yeah, that's the name.
McIntosh.
You call her McIntosh? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sheba,
yeah, that's right. Keturah Riley. Mm-hmm. Keturah Riley was the secretary. Mm-hmm. I know that. I almost forgot Keturah until you mentioned her name. Mm-hmm. You know she passed away.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Keturah Riley. Mm-hmm. And her mother. I can't remember her name.
You mean? Not Sheba's mother, Keturah, but
Sheba's
Keturah's
grandmother.
Her grandmother.
Mm-hmm. Right. I can't remember her name. It'll come to me, I guess.
Mm-hmm. What about Emma McLeod?
Yes. Who's Mother McLeod today. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Sister Shelman.
Sister Shelman. What about Mother Wells?
Yeah, her sister, Helena Wells. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she came. Yeah, she used to teach Hebrew. Mm-hmm. She taught Hebrew.
Mm-hmm. What about the Piper family? Were they?
I don't know.
No. How about Pilgrim?
Oh, yeah. Myrtle Pilgrim came. And what's her name? Johnson. Miriam Johnson. Mm-hmm. And Miriam and Myrtle Pilgrim. Mm-hmm. They came. Mm-hmm.
Right now, just some of the people we've mentioned, this is an example of Caribbean and American.
Yeah, yeah. I never heard any content or they didn't like this or that. I never heard that. Mm-hmm. And if it was, it went over my head. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right. But you would say that they all work together very closely and a lot of harmony.
That's the only way I can give it to you, Rabbi. Mm-hmm. I never witnessed or heard any type of discontentment among them. They might have had their little private squabble, but I was never privy to any of that.
Mm-hmm. As we mentioned these, just so that they're not just names, could you think of any events or any sayings or anything to describe these people? When I mention the name, just tell me the first thing that comes into your mind about them. Like, say, for instance,
Miriam Johnson was a Hebrew teacher.
Okay. Who were some of the other teachers there, both teaching children and adults?
Sister Wells.
Later, Mother Wells.
Mother Wells, I mean.
What was she like?
Oh, nice person. Mm-hmm. She was a nice person. Mm-hmm. She greeted everybody with a smile. Mm-hmm. Everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, great person. No, Brother Steele, Robert Steele, mm-hmm. who was the shamans.
Right, he was my godfather.
Oh, yeah, hey, Robert Steele. Mm-hmm.
What was he like?
He was a gentleman. But one thing I liked about him more, though, He wasn't rough. He wasn't, you know, sit down. He'd take his seat, this is your seat. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And he always had a pocket full of candy to give to kids. always. But you have to be on time, because he would tell you that you can't come in now. Mm-hmm. Having Torah service. Mm-hmm. You want to wait when Torah service, he let you in. Mm-hmm. But he wouldn't let you in when Torah was being, when they get ready to say Torah service, you could not enter the sanctuary. Mm-hmm. That was the word he used. You can't get to the sanctuary.
Right. Who are some of your closest friends in the synagogue, in the congregation?
I didn't have any. Mm-hmm. Because I came out of Brooklyn, mm-hmm. and most of those people there, let's see who came from Brooklyn. But I know Myrtle Pilgrim and Miriam Johnson, and they came together because I didn't have any country. Mm-hmm. Mordecai Joseph. Mm-hmm. He was my age bracket. Him and his brother, mm-hmm. Mordecai. And his brother. His brother was a policeman. What the heck is his name?
Now, was one of Rabbi Matthewson's also a policeman?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But we were just, hello, how are you? Mm-hmm. I saw his son. Mm-hmm. But they used to be out for the holidays mostly. Mm-hmm. But for Shabbat, after Shabbat, like, you know, I'd see them mostly holiday time. Mm-hmm. I see him mostly all day time, one of his sons.
Now, when did you acquire the building at 1 West 23rd Street, and how did that...
Now, I didn't acquire the building. I wasn't involved in that at all. That's all Rabbi Yehonatan, Rabbi Matthew, and that crew. I don't know how they acquired it. All I know is when we went to the synagogue, or the temple that day, that Shabbat, the announcement was made that they're going to be relocating to 123rd Street. And that's all I have on that knowledge. Mm-hmm. That's all I know.
And so once the congregation moved there, did it change at all?
No. Mm-hmm. No. The rules still stood. Mm-hmm. It just was a bigger place. Mm-hmm. You know, more floors. Mm-hmm. But the service, nothing changed. Rabbi Matthew was still Rabbi Matthew. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if Rabbi Stephen was with us then. Or was he?
Yeah, he'll be there, yeah.
Yeah, and also, Robert Steele was still with us. And Rabbi Donnelly Small was Rabbi Matthew's right-hand man. Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah. Well, describe... you know, the mood of the congregation when y'all moved into that building. Just, you know, I saw a testimonial journal of a banquet, and
yeah.
I've seen pictures. People were very happy and excited.
Yeah.
And,
mm-hmm. I didn't go to the banquet. Mm-hmm. I didn't go. I know that they had a banquet. I think I bought a ticket, but I didn't go to the banquet. They were getting ready to move over to 23rd and where they are, where it used to be. And when I went, it was okay. We lunched there. We ate lunch in the lunchroom down. Well, there was more room. Rabbi Matthew had his office in the secretary, who I think was Catherine Riley, she had a place she could work, you know. I guess her and sister, what the heck is her name? Louise Burrell. Mm-hmm. I guess she and Sister Burrell shared the same office. Mm-hmm. I believe she was a member of the board. What the heck was her name? Vanderpool.
And,
I can't remember her first name, but Sister Shum was there. She was a regular cook, and evidently Rabbi Matthew overseen that.
So Sister Shum, she would prepare a lot of the food?
Yeah. Evan and Michelle.
Who else would assist her in the kitchen?
I don't think she was the only one. I never saw nobody else in that kitchen. In fact, I didn't really go in the kitchen. Well, she was strict about that, too. And then, at that time, Rabbi White and his wife, they all came on 28th Street, too. They came. We almost came together around 1955, around that time. All came. Because, who else came with him? Sometime Rabbi Jonah and Rabbi White usually traveled together.
Can you talk a little bit about Rabbi Jonah?
Not much. Not much. He didn't really do any work on the Bema until after Rabbi Matthew passed away. Then he came to the Bema with Rabbi White. Rabbi Jonah was on the Bema.
Rabbi Stevens?
No, he passed. Wasn't on it. Wasn't. Rabbi Stevens was not at 128th Street.
He came. No. I guess. Yeah. Well, I think he would have been.
I think he
died. Yeah. No. He died in the after by Matthews. In fact.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Rabbi Matthew died in 1973.
Right. Stevens was after that.
But he. I didn't see Rabbi Stevens. Don't remember seeing him too much on 23rd Street. I remember him from 28th Street, but not too much from 23rd Street, because he was sort of sickly anyway. I don't know.
Right.
But his picture not here is Rabbi Stevens.
How about, was Rabbi Yisrael, Rabbi Moses, Rabbi Woods, were they frequent?
I can't say that. Didn't see them often. Very rare. I think Rabbi Wood was from Brooklyn.
Well, these were all students of Rabbi Matthews.
Yes, but they didn't.
And I was just wondering what their relationship was with him during that period.
They might have come around, I'm not sure, but I never saw them. Mm-hmm. I always believed that they went and established their own temple someplace. Mm-hmm. But where they, I only know that Rabbi Wood was in Brooklyn. I know that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you ever heard this name, Rabbi E. Leon Richelieu.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He came in Brooklyn. He was in 12 Demonica place where he was. Mm-hmm. But I never saw him at any of the temples. Mm-hmm. E. Leon Richelieu.
Right, yeah.
I saw him.
I've seen pictures of him.
Yeah.
You know.
He came to visit my father, and they were friends, but I never saw him in the temple or whatever.
Did you ever visit his congregation?
No.
Right.
I never knew he had a congregation. Uh-huh. I never knew he had.
What about Rabbi Binyamin?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. Binyamin. What was
Mordecai? Mordecai?
When you said Mordecai, I think of the young man I was friendly with, but he wasn't a rabbi. Mm-hmm. Mordecai Joseph?
No. Herman.
Mordecai.
People not necessarily connected. What about Rabbi Parris? When did you first come to know him?
Oh, I didn't meet Rabbi Parris later in the year. Let's see. I met Rabbi Parris. He came up to 28th Street. I don't remember Rabbi, so I can't really give you a definitive answer on that.
He would have been younger, and of course he grew up with Rabbi Yisrael, you know, Kahal, yeah. And then
do that down with Rabbi. See, when I lived in Brooklyn,
and his mother, Rabbi Parris's mother,
I didn't know.
You know,
but I do know this. I'm trying to think. Say, Rabbi Parris, did he ever come to a place called Little House Knowledge? It used to be on Patchen Avenue.
I don't know. I have to ask him about that.
Little House of Knowledge. Mm-hmm. That was Rabbi that Rabbi Yirmiyahu, because right now Rabbi Baruch is in charge of that temple.
Oh, Bnei Adad.
Bnei Adad.
Right.
But before...
Well, that was started with Rabbi Yisrael and Rabbi McLeod.
Yeah.
Right. Do you remember Rabbi McLeod?
Vaguely. But I do know Rabbi Yirmiyahu, or Rabbi. I knew him because I should see him that. And when, and I did, like, this is, let's say this is Patchen Avenue. Mm-hmm. This is McDonald. I'm at Madison Street where I live. Mm-hmm. Even though I saw them, because of course, 4 feet from my house, of where I lived, was a park. Mm-hmm. And when they would have lunchtime, most of the men would come out there and sit on the bench of the park. Mm-hmm. But I only went to that little place around the corner once, called Little House of Knowledge, because I was going to New York with Rabbi Matthew at the time.
So that was before they moved into the current building?
Yes, right, on 28th Street.
Then, you remember that place called Little House of Knowledge?
Yeah.
And that was Rabbi Yisrael?
Yeah.
And who else was with him at that time?
I don't know. I don't know who was with him. I know Brother Tobin. You know who Tobin?
Tobin, right.
Tobin used to be a member of that temple. Because I used to see him, but I didn't know him. You know, I didn't know him. Because by the time I'd be heading out there, catching the bus to get to the subway to get to...
Right. What about Rabbi Samuels?
I just heard about him. Mm-hmm. I don't remember ever seeing him. Although his family used to come to 23rd Street.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. As we move forward just in time, through the 1970s and 80s, I guess, what changes took place in the congregation over that time, from the time you moved into 123rd Street through, say, the death of Rabbi Matthews? And
Rabbi Matthew died on 23rd Street. The only big change that really took place after Rabbi Matthew's death, well, you know, before Rabbi Matthew died, he ordained 3 men.
Okay.
Rabbi White, mm-hmm. Rabbi Jonah, and David.
Right. Well, the class before that, Rabbi Yehonatan and my father. Right? So I do want to ask you about that. Because by the time Rabbi White and Jonah were ordained, he had already established Beth Shalom. So
your father had already established Beth Shalom.
Right.
Wasn't Rabbi what's his name? He's sick. He's dead now. Poinsett. He wasn't.
No. Yeah. No. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Your father did organize Rabbi Shalom.
Beth Shalom.
Beth Shalom.
Right. But
I never went over there.
So I was. Do you remember his ordination?
Your father?
Right. Or I guess more specifically, how would you describe their relationship, Rabbi Matthew's relationship
with my father? They had a good relationship, as far as I could tell. You understand? Mm-hmm. Because your father was, I would say, what's the word I want to use? He was dynamic to get this knowledge, this knowledge of who he was. Because we're not him, we should talk all the time. Because they worked together, I understand. But I wasn't at his ordination.
Would you say that Rabbi Matthews and my father were very close, both as when he was a member and then as a student?
Well, I guess I would have to say that because he attended all those classes. And he wasn't in a hurry to get out of there when the service was over. You know, he wanted to talk to the rabbi. I'd have to say they were, well, I can't say bosom, but I know it was close. I know it was close. And I guess Rabbi Matthew had a chance to study him a lot better than me. You understand? Because I wasn't tend to be no rabbi or nothing, so I didn't get out there.
Now, when he established Beth Shalom, first a smaller place,
I don't even know that.
And then when they moved to 730 Willoughby Avenue, Rabbi Matthews came to the dedication.
He did?
Of both places, and their pictures. Matter of fact, all this.
They never mentioned that. I never heard that.
Yeah. So the here's a picture actually. Again, I don't really want to do this one for the tape, but here's a picture of Rabbi Matthews at the Shalom.
Oh yeah, I didn't know that. They never let nobody ever talks about that. So get my glass out so I get a good look.
So I just want to ask you about. I mean. So in this photograph, you see Rabbi Smalls, Rabbi Stevens, Rabbi Yohanan, Rabbi Jonah, my father, and Rabbi Matthew sitting at the desk. Uh-huh. And
this is the rabbinical board at that time.
Right. But this picture is taken at Beth Shalom. Right. So but the reason I wanted to just briefly.
What happened to Rabbi? I know. I'm going to say, what happened to Rabbi? Oh, I see it now. The yarmulke on Rabbi Yohanan, way back there.
Right. And then this is from the same period. This is at Commandment Keepers. And, of course, Rabbi Matthews is in the center.
Yeah.
Rabbi Smalls and Rabbi Stevens.
This is Jonah.
Rabbi Jonah, my father.
Right.
I can't make out. This is Rabbi Young.
I never met this.
Rabbi Gray from Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
But this is 1967. And this would be about 68. So the pictures, you know, kind of speak for themselves.
Oh, yeah.
But the reason I wanted to ask you is, to your knowledge, was there ever any tension or conflict
among these?
For Rabbi Matthews to his students who went out and started congregations? How did he feel about the creation of Beth Shalom? My father left Commandment Keepers to start another congregation. Was he happy about that? Was he proud, or supportive, or angry?
I never heard anything. I didn't even know he ever attended Beth Shalom. Nobody's ever spoke to me. First time I'm hearing it right now.
Well, when Rabbi Matthews would speak about his students, particularly about my father, did he always speak about him with pride in terms of what he was doing, or was he angry with him leaving?
I never heard him speak of anybody in particular. He never mentioned Rabbi Shlomo.
Well, how about with this picture? This is at Commandment Keepers. This is at Commandment Keepers. They're taken about the same time, 1967 and 1968. So what I'm trying to, you know, piece together.
You're trying to establish whether there was any relationship between them, like friends.
Right. Well, again,
I think it has to be that way because I had never heard Rabbi Matthew or any of these other rabbis on this photo speak harshly about Rabbi Shlomo, Rabbi Levi Ben Levi.
Well, I just wanted to, you know, I mean, obviously they're on the same board.
Evidently.
This is the early Israelite Board of Rabbis and the same school. And so I just wanted to, now in the years, this one is at Commandment Keepers. Uh-huh. And throughout, say, the late 1960s through the early 1970s, up into 1973, when my father would come back up to Commandment Keepers, how was he received? Come back to visit the congregation.
I never know anybody to speak harshly about any rabbi, and particularly your father. You know, they might say, "Oh, we got a visit, Rabbi Shlomo Ben Levi." Okay.
So you say he was always welcome back at the congregation?
I think so. I never heard any harshness, you know, about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think Rabbi Matthew. I'm just saying now, just my observation. I don't think he would have anything harsh to say about Rabbi Shlomo or any of the other rabbis. Mm-hmm. He might have downgraded some, but not in my presence.
Mm-hmm. How about at his funeral? Do you remember?
I didn't go to the funeral. Mm-hmm. Yes, I did go to the funeral. I'm sorry. I went to the funeral. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Matthew's funeral, you're talking
right.
about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that was on 70-some street and what's the name of that big funeral home? I can't think of the name of it, but it's still there. Mm-hmm. Still there. I was at that funeral. Okay. But I didn't go to the cemetery. That's right. I didn't go to the cemetery.
All right.
But if there was any, if there was any type of hostility that existed between your father and Rabbi Matthew, I never.
Well, I'm not trying to suggest that. What I'm trying to get at is I have heard other people say that there was conflict, and so I want to get your perspective as someone who was there. If you, you know, say, well, I was there, I didn't see conflict.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that I saw your father at commandment keepers. Mm-hmm.
So during your time, was their relationship always affectionate and
I can't
close?
Use that word affectionate, but mm-hmm. I do know it seemed to me that your father was anxious to get this knowledge. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And he always showed a good interest in it. Now, he sat in the pew ahead of me. Mm-hmm. Monette, and I sat second pew, your father sat in the first pew, along with Rabbi Jonah and so many other, whoever was up there. Mm-hmm. But as far as his lecture was concerned, I never heard Rabbi Matthew or any other rabbi speak harshly of your father.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I never heard your father speak harshly of anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I think that's sufficient. I wanted to get that on the record anyway.
Yeah, I never heard it. Mm-hmm. If there was conflict between these rabbis on any particular, I wouldn't be privy to it anyway. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, not between them, but I guess just to wrap up this part of the conversation, if for other people who have said that there was conflict, that's not your recollection.
No, not mine at all.
All right.
Not mine at all. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I've seen them shake hands. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's sufficient. And again, there could be different points of view, but the question is, what's the source? And I'm speaking to you as someone who was there during this whole period and observed their relationship.
I was there when Matt and your father came together too. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, you know, I'll tell you something about it. Some of the stuff, you're going to hear all kinds of what's called, you know, rumors. Mm-hmm. And maybe somebody who didn't like your father might have tried to influence Rabbi Matthew, or maybe the other way around, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I never witnessed any of that. Mm-hmm. And I was really around them.
Okay.
I wasn't privy to the meetings or whatever else, mm-hmm. but I was there for services. I never saw Rabbi Matthew give him any problems. They were roommates. Or Rabbi Jonathan, he used to take Rabbi Matthew to all them lectures over the country, him mm-hmm. and his wife. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Jonah, he wasn't too well, mm-hmm. you know. But I never saw or heard, I don't know, how do you think get out?
Right. No, again, my understanding is that they had a pretty close and harmonious relationship throughout that. And I just wanted to get your opinion on that.
Never heard anything about that.
Did you know anything about the Royal Order of Ethiopian Hebrews?
I heard about
it. In terms of the lodge.
Yeah, I heard about it. Mm-hmm. I heard about it, but I never went to any of those meetings. And I used to hear Rabbi Matthew occasionally mention Marcus Garvey, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. but I never, or the UNI, right. United Negro Improvement Association.
Right.
I heard about that. Mm-hmm. I went to Harlem one time, saw one of their parades. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Was your father a Garveyite?
He was a Garveyite, mm-hmm. but he wasn't, I would say, really a Garveyite, you know, like that.
In terms of a nationalist.
Garveyite. Yeah.
Describe now, if you will, and I know we're a little bit over our time, but what happened to the congregation after Rabbi Matthew's passed away?
After Rabbi Matthew passed, some of the members left. Who left, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Some of them went up to the Bronx. Mm-hmm. Some of them went to, and I couldn't tell who it was, but that's what happened. But the congregation, after Rabbi Matthew died, did dwindle. Mm-hmm. Not drastically, but it dwindled. Mm-hmm. Maybe this week you'd see, you could tell, because all the seats weren't filled. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. All seats weren't filled. And then after Rabbi White died, it really took a dive. You know, but up until that point, up to after Rabbi Matthew died, we didn't have the same full house, standing room crowd all the time as before. It was always a seat or a room for whoever came. It did begin to drop off, and really dropped off, really, is when Rabbi White passed away. We got down to about, let's see, on the Sabbath we had maybe, very rarely were we able to have a minyan after Rabbi White died.
Well, I tell you what, let's take a brief break right here, and then we'll pick up from 1973 to the present.
All right.
Okay, let's just call it a stop.